everybody. Welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. Great to be with you guys. Hope you're having a wonderful spring. You might be heading to a bear hunt right now, or back from a bear hunt, or planning one. Maybe it's turkey, or you're just getting out and enjoying the nice weather, looking for sheds. Whatever it is, hope you guys are getting out and enjoying spring, because it doesn't last long. So today I have a podcast with one of my partners, Ryan Sapina from Seek Outside Shelters. And I've done a podcast with Ryan before, but I thought it was time to catch up. He's a really cool guy. He lives out in Colorado, where Seek Outside is based. And in this episode, we get into a lot of stuff about hunting in Colorado. So this year I hunted in Colorado for the first time, a DIY solo public land mule deer hunt, where I was really able to really use all the skills that I've learned from other people and from just time in the field over the past four seasons, and went out there and filled my tag on a nice mature 4-point buck on opening day, you know, on my own. And it was really, really awesome, really gratifying feeling to see how far I've come since, you know, my first mule deer hunt several years ago. So great state to hunt. A lot of stuff going on there, though. So we talk a lot about hunting in Colorado. Also, you know, I've been running Seek Outside Shelters for years now. My go-to is my Dyneema Cimarron. I'm looking at it right now in the pile of junk in the corner of my room that I'm about to start packing for New Zealand. I love that shelter. It's super quick and easy to put up. It's secure. It's spacious enough for two if you need to, but I like to take it as a solo shelter because, you know, there's smaller, lighter options for like super backcountry hunts, but it's still very lightweight in that Dyneema especially. And I like to have a shelter where I can stand up in there if I have to get dressed, have room to store gear. And I like to even bring an ultralight chair with me a lot of times to put in there because, you know, sometimes you just got to get in your shelter, get out of the rain without having to completely undress and crawl in your sleeping bag. So for me, it's a huge morale booster to be able to crawl into my shelter, stay warm, get dressed in relative warmth and dryness, store my gear in a dry, secure area. So my go-to, unless I have to really save weight and space, is a Dyneema Cimarron with a half nest. And like I said, I'll bring a chair to put in there. And everything's nice and secure. I really enjoy having that extra space. So I have done hunts before in a Silex. Still totally comfortable and doable, but not as comfortable. Let's say that. It's a little tight. You know, it's a great option if you really, really need to cut weight and space. But if you want a little bit more comfort and more space, I recommend the Cimarron. It's very versatile because you can also fit two guys in there if you want. I've done a hunt for my first mule deer hunt ever I did with a Cimarron, and me and Luke Dusenberry stayed in that thing together for a week with a stove and firewood. Great all-around shelter, very quick and easy to put up. And Seek Outside just updated the Cimarron and the Red Cliff with a bunch of new, I think the Silver Tip as well, a bunch of new updates, design improvements, and that kind of thing. So we get into that as well. And, you know, it's a great time to start looking at shelters and gear right now if you're in the market for stuff. I do have a discount code with Seek Outside. It's Quest, Q-U-E-S-T. You'll save a little bit of money and you'll be helping me out as well. So if you are going to make a purchase from Seek Outside, please use that code Quest. I also run a large U-turn stove when the occasion calls for it. It's ultralight, very, very packable titanium wood stove. And in certain situations, that thing is absolutely money, especially later in the season where, you know, where I last time I used it was on a later season mule deer hunt. We had weather come in. It's that same hunt I did with Luke. And just to be able to go into that thing at the end of the night, as you guys know, like a lot of times those later season hunts, it gets dark early and it's cold. It could be snowy, it could be rainy. So be able to crawl in there, start a fire, warm yourself up, dry your stuff off, and just something about having a fire is like a huge morale boost. So, that's a really killer setup. Check out seekoutside.com. Again, if you do pull a trigger or anything, I would ask that you please use that code Quest. You're going to save some money and it will help me out. So this is a great podcast. Again, I want to remind you to go over to YouTube. I have a couple new bear hunt films out right now. It's a two-part series in Oregon, public land, black bear hunt. We filled two tags. My buddy Josh killed a 37-year-old sow. That age is verified by the state. And I killed a nice, I think maybe 15-year-old chocolate boar. Really cool hunt series. And I'm thinking I'm going to start releasing hunts here soon. So definitely go over to the YouTube channel. You know, I debated waiting and holding off and releasing stuff closer to the hunting season, but I'm kind of thinking I'm just going to start dropping stuff here this summer. So I got an Alaska haul road adventure. I have a really cool New Mexico antelope hunt I did with Thosh Collins, a Native American friend of mine, and we kind of share with each other our different cultural and spiritual practices on that hunt. Very interesting. I almost got bit by a rattlesnake. Let's see. I got that DIY Colorado mule deer. I got a horseback elk hunt I did with my friend David of Bow Spider. Going to be dropping the New Zealand episodes as soon as I have them in pocket. And an Audad hunt. I think I hit everything. Anyway, season 3 is phenomenal. It's epic. So please go over to my YouTube channel, search my name, Hunter McWaters, or The Hunter's Quest. Subscribe and you'll be able to see, you can turn on the notifications. You'll be able to see, if you're not subscribed yet, you'll be able to see like, I think 15 or 20 already banger hunt films I have on there. You can binge. And then I'm going to be rolling out new stuff. So go subscribe. Share it with friends and family. Share the podcast with friends and family. You can follow along on Instagram as well. It's a good way to keep in touch with what's going on. But yeah, I really appreciate y'all's support. Last thing I wanted to say is if you're looking for gear, again, now's a great time. Try some Canis Athlete apparel. It's the best hunting stuff I've ever worn. I wouldn't say that if it weren't true. And I wouldn't work with them if it wasn't the best stuff I've ever used. Everyone I've recommended it to and has tried it has absolutely loved it. And super high quality, well-made stuff, very durable. It's an investment, but it will last. And it's second to none in the industry. I give you my word on that. So go to canisathlete.com. Use the code Quest over there. Again, you will save some money and that will help me out big time. Start small, grab a pair of pants or a top, their Pamir synthetic insulation jacket, and their Kafui or their Alpine light pants are a couple of my favorites. Just try some pieces. I promise you, you will not be disappointed, and use that code Quest. Other than that, guys, thank you for your support. I'm headed out to New Zealand in about 2 weeks to hunt with Joe Edlington of J.E. Wild, so keep us in prayer. That should be a really fun hunt and some amazing content over there as well. And I'm going to be coming out soon with some videos of some new gear I've been testing and using from Garmin Outdoor. I got a new Tactics 8 watch and the new Messenger Plus, which allows you to send pictures. So I'm going to experiment with that in New Zealand. I just tried the applied ballistics feature on my new Tactics 8 watch in conjunction with the Garmin Zero chronograph. And it creates a just spot on range guard. It made sighting in my muzzleloader like a dream, and that thing shoots lights out. So I'm going to do a podcast soon about all that new stuff. There's some really awesome, awesome new stuff from Eberle Stock coming out. Another awesome one of my partners. And I got a whole bunch of really new gear and stuff I'm using this season that I want to run through with you guys. A new muzzleloader setup, new optic on it. So be on the lookout also on the YouTube channel. I'm going to do a couple gear dump type videos and run-throughs And just talk about my weapons, new stuff I'm using, new gadgets, new toys. Lots of cool stuff in the works, guys. So please, please, if you like what I'm doing at all, just go over and subscribe on YouTube and share it with a friend, share it with somebody in your family, and just I appreciate your support. So I know this is a long intro, but I wanted to go through a couple things. So enjoy this episode with Ryan of Seek Outside, and make sure to check him out at seekoutside.com. Enjoy. We were just talking about podcasts and stuff like that. I haven't, I'm coming up on 200 episodes, and we were talking about keeping it fresh and hitting things from different angles and scheduling guests and the challenges of just kind of that kind of stuff. But, it seems like they do, and you mentioned Mediator podcast. I haven't listened to their podcast a lot, but it seems like at least the stuff I see on social, they are always doing something kind of weird, interesting, quirky. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they have a good setup because they have the, like, people write in. And I think that's a big part, because you get to, you know, bounce that feedback off of, I'm sure you have people that comment on Instagram and stuff like that. And that gives you good feedback just to keep it rolling in a fresh direction.
But yeah, feedback is important. So, So on that note, if you guys have feedback, if you're listening and want to send me a message, go for it. But guys, I am talking to my buddy Ryan from Seek Outside today. And I definitely want to talk about some of y'all's new products and stuff, but I just want to hear what's going on with you and what you've been up to. How was that new show you guys were at in Oregon?
It was good. Yeah, we were at the Northwest Hunt Expo. In Hillsboro, Oregon.
Is that the first year they've done that one?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay. Yep. I heard good things, though.
Yeah. And I actually wasn't there. I was at the at a banquet for the Colorado Bow Hunters Association here in Denver. But apparently it went good. It was it seems like for anybody that's up in that area, it's a good show that it, you know, because we went to Portland, the big expo up there.
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, and that one, you know, some of those bigger expo, like it's a great show, but there's also a lot of fishing stuff. Mm-hmm. There's even, you know, parts of that thing that are, I mean, it's just so big. They have like brands that are selling like, you know, couch cleaners to get your dog hair off the couch, and like, stuff that's, whereas this Northwest Hunt Expo was a lot more concentrated, just purely hunting gear. And you know, from very quality brands, is what it seems like they're trying to make it. So anybody that's up in the area, like next year, definitely, I recommend going to it.
Yeah. So the Portland show, how would you rank that in as far as like size compared to the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake?
I would say it's probably bigger, in terms of the amount of people. And it's like 5 days instead of four, I think, which is Western Hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, like on Saturday, we kind of break shows down into where we do a couple different shifts. And so people come in at noon or whatever. And, on Saturday at the Portland Expo, I was coming in at noon, and it literally took me an hour and a half to get parking, because there was so many people lining up there. So, I mean, it's a good show though. That lots of good brands. And I mean, you know, shows are, I think, for the average person, if you go to one, you've seen most of them.
Yeah.
Right. It was a good one. And it's my first time up in Portland there. So,
Speaking of that area, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, because I just a couple weeks ago put out a bear hunt on YouTube, and tomorrow, March 20th, I'm putting out the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
From Oregon.
Nice.
And that was my second time hunting in Oregon. I now have like probably I'd say my closest hunting buddy, which is unfortunate that he lives literally as far away as you can possibly be in the continental US from me, pretty much. But in Oregon, and like it's a sleeper state as far as opportunity. There's a lot of over-the-counter opportunity, and good hunting up there.
I've always wanted to go up there. We were talking with the guys from Born and Raised at that Portland Expo, and they're kind of more coastal, but especially the bear hunting up there sounds awesome just because it's different. Like, I've been up to Idaho and Wyoming on spring bear hunts, and like definitely seems like a much different process than hunting those, coastal bears there.
I've never done the spring bear hunt there, but so we did fall bear, which was really cool because, for me, I'm always looking at ways I can like extend my season, and it opens August 1st. So, and I was writing a, I'm writing an article about it right now. It was just like fun, like because I have a really good friend there. So he, we had a campsite. He set up his trailer. Like we were swimming in a lake, midday, like we were glassing before the opener and like flip flops and like shorts and t-shirts, just like fun, And then the tags are easy to get. You can get two tags, they're cheap. And if you hit it right, it's really berry dependent, like when the berries ripen. And those like that like week when the berries are like full on out and ripe, like we saw like probably over 30 bears in like 2 days.
Man, yeah, that's awesome. I've done fall bear last, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years. Sometimes, because here in Colorado, a lot of people can get it as like an add-on tag for like 30 or 40 bucks on top of their over-the-counter like elk tag in certain units. Because we have some units where there's so many bears, right? And especially when those berries come out. Fall bear is, I think it's a very underrated hunting opportunity because of that. Like, especially if you do have the ability to go like elk hunt or deer hunt while also trying to punch a bear tag, it's like, it's spot and stock. I've also noticed that like fall bears, I've been on a few kills, and both myself and like other people, and it's they get so like when those, especially here in Colorado, it's like choke cherry, service berry that they'll just be mowing on, and it, to the point where I think that they just get so zoned in on those berries, you can walk right up to them, like going through thick stuff. They're just, and I think part of it is because, you can almost hear their jaws just chowing down on berries, and they just can't hear anything coming up behind them. So it's a really fun way to hunt. And I mean, bear meat, man,
Yeah,
it is unbelievable.
they're fat and all fed on like finished on berries right then. And yeah, I mean, I remember my buddy, like when we were out there, like talking about sometimes you get out to the right cut, and like before the sun rises, you can't see yet, and you can just literally hear him like,
Chowing down.
just yeah. And they were definitely mowing. I don't know if they were eating. They're calling them black caps in Oregon. Is that different, or is that the same thing you're talking about? Or you're not sure?
I'm
Could
not
just be a
sure.
regional like name difference. They look like wild raspberries, but they were, the ripe ones were like dark, dark red, almost black.
The berries, like service berry and choke cherry, they're not, they're like, just they don't have any they're just a sphere. So
No,
probably a
like
little
little
bit
bumps and
different.
stuff.
But for us, like we have like three or four in a lot of the stuff that I hunt. There's three or four different types of berries. And then we also have like Gamble's Oak, which produces acorns like, late September, early October. And as soon as those pop out, I mean, that's when they're just going to town because it's, much higher fat content than a bunch of berries. But basically that whole, process is it can last from like September 1st to October, mid-October. And September 1st is just when bear season opens here, or September 2nd, whatever. So
Yeah.
it's a little bit less like
Wait, you said it
week
opens.
dependent.
When did you say it opens over there?
Ours is like the first weekend of September.
Okay, so you don't get that August stuff, but
No.
have you ever gone out specifically to hunt black bears, or is it usually just a tag you have in your pocket when you go out hunting something else?
I have, yeah. So I kind of have like a system here in Colorado just with like
All right,
elk
let's
and
hear
deer
it, man.
tags. Yeah. So, and actually, hold on. Let me close this door real quick.
Ooh, okay, it's secret. Are you closing the door to protect your secret system, even though you're dropping it on a podcast
Nah, just
right
pretty, we got, where all of our stuff is made right here in Grand Junction, so we got all the saws and stuff as
Yeah, I
well.
was
So
just kidding. No, that's cool.
yeah. That'd be funny though. It's a secret right now. It's not so much about like bear hunting, it's more so just like my system for
Yeah.
having good quality hunts every year.
Sure.
And it kind of like started during COVID, right? Because the unit that I hunted during, growing up and we'd always archery elk hunt there. COVID, I mean, we got in there and it was just crazy amounts of people. Tough to hunt and
Yeah.
I mean, it was to the point where they had to shut that unit down for over the counter the next year. But so
Quick
I
side
start,
question. Has
yeah.
that decreased since COVID, or is it did it stay like that?
It's definitely decreased.
Okay.
Yep, definitely decreased. And I tell everybody this, but I think a lot of people, like especially here in Colorado, they got all juiced up during COVID. They were like, "Oh, let's go kill some elk," and then they
Yeah.
got up to 10,000 feet and they had to hike through oak brush, and they're like, "Yeah, maybe this isn't for me."
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe farm-raised elk meat from the store.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, go ahead.
But yeah, so I try to, I've noticed at least here like the units that are, if you have to draw for it, as opposed, and it's like this everywhere, if you have to draw for it, even if it's, doesn't take many preference points, you just get such a higher quality hunt. It's more fun. I just like, I'd much rather just not be around people.
Yeah.
So what I've kind of started doing is, save up a couple preference points and I have it staggered to where it's like 1 year I'll have, a couple for deer. And then the next year I'll have a couple for elk, and then I got antelope tags as well. And so it's kind of like a cycle.
For
But
sure.
here, I mean, sometimes you can get like the over-the-counter stuff, or you always can. But a lot of times, if you have a deer tag in a good unit, you can't always get like an over-the-counter elk tag. So I try to
Right.
like rotate it, but bear ends up being the thing. I'm kind of the same as you. Like I want my season to be as long as possible. So the two things that I'll do, it like if I don't have like an elk tag or something like that, is I'll do bear and fall turkey as well. Fall turkey is really fun, and again, like most people don't do it because it's during, elk and deer season. But like it's here in Colorado, you can hunt them with like smaller caliber rifles in the fall. So you can kind of, I don't know. It's just a fun way to get out and
Get in
extend
the
that
woods.
season. Yeah. But fall bear, it's so fun.
Yeah.
It's just so fun.
So do in Colorado, do residents, like if you got 3 points and I got 3 points as a non-resident, are you gonna get way better draw odds and better stuff, or is it the same?
Oh yeah, definitely. And it like I don't know this, but just in looking at the research websites, Go Hunt and stuff like that, it almost looks like, especially with some of the better units, it's kind of almost like non-resident is close to double.
Oh,
Like
wow.
for a unit that takes me 3 preference points, it takes them like 6 or whatever. So yeah, it's a lot easier for us to, but
Okay.
it's also weird. I mean, so much of it is based on tag allocations, and I don't know. We just have like we have a couple like huge unit clumps where it's, you draw this one tag and you get like 4 or 5 units,
Yeah.
right? And they'll allocate, 2,000, 3,000 tags for some of those. But with some of the recent changes, like in Colorado now, there's no over-the-counter archery for non-residents starting this year. And then there's also like they've taken a lot of the units over the counter. They've kind of taken them off the over the counter to where you have to draw them now. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of changes over the next 4 to 5 years, because that, people are going to be, and there's talks about, well, I mean, there's pretty, I don't know if it's set in stone yet, but they are talking about in 2028 changing the tag allocations for non-residents here in Colorado. So it'll be like, I think right now it's like 80-20 or something like that, 70-30, maybe even 60-40. I know we have a pretty generous tag allocation, but they're looking at changing that so that it's more preferential to residents, kind of like where every other state is going. So it'll be interesting to see how people, if people start burning their points on lower units because they're gonna have worse odds in the future, or I don't know how that's gonna work, but yeah, it's getting interesting everywhere with preference points.
Yeah, for sure, man. And yeah, especially for, for me, like I have a similar kind of system like you, except for it's like seven states or like whatever. It's a ton. 'Cause I'm trying to do like six or seven hunts a year, and I don't do high draw stuff. Usually, I mean, I only started, buying points like 5 years ago or something. So, I did, as burn some Colorado deer points this year. I had a great hunt. Like, I only burned 3 points. You remember which units I was in, right?
I do, yep.
Okay. I burned 3 points. And you'd let me know if you think this is like, if I just got lucky or if this is like pretty normal experience. When we got in, it had the day or two before dropped about 10 to 12 inches of snow. So there was that, and then there was a kind of a nice day the day before the opener, and then it started snowing, and it snowed another like 8 or 10 inches or something like the day before the opener. So there's quite a bit of snow on the ground. But and I can't really fully judge the experience because how quick we tagged out. Like we were done by 9:30 on the opener. Which maybe next time I'll be a little more picky, but hey, mature 4-point buck, like I wasn't
No, it's
passing
a
him up. So,
great buck.
But I only saw one other group of hunters, and it was on our way out with my buck. And we were only like 2.5 miles in, from a campsite that we walked from our campsite in, and we were the only people in the campsite. And as I've had experience in the past with Colorado, clean campsite, nice picnic table, fire circle, bathroom, like little, outhouse, so like good infrastructure, I absolutely love. I thought it was a great experience. It also doesn't help or doesn't hurt that it was like, it was just clean, quick, nice buck in out. You know what I mean? And saw some elk in there too. So you think that's a pretty typical experience on a 3-point unit, or you think I got lucky with the weather might have kept some guys out, or and this is third rifle too.
I mean, I think the big one is, first off, those third rifle deer tags. I mean, there's basically no units in Colorado. There's maybe one or two where a resident can draw it with no points. So even most residents have to build up points to get that third rifle tag here for deer. So I mean that goes a long way to keeping people out. And I don't know if that was like an over the counter. I have a feeling that I'm pretty sure that that one's not over the counter elk. I mean, that's the big one, is if you have a deer tag in one of those units where they also have over the counter elk.
Well, I do remember for me as a non-resident, it was like twice as many points to draw the elk tag in that unit than the deer.
I'm pretty sure that's a pretty good elk unit there, but I think that's a big part of it. I mean, because you can There's some units that take a lot of points for like a third mule deer tag, but it's over the counter elk, and there's going to be a lot of guys there, for the most part. Especially, I mean, like this is not like a secret or anything. Like the big units here in Colorado for deer are like, 44, 45 around that Eagle Valley. And there are like some of those units have over the counter, second and third rifle tags for elk. So, they're going to be, there's not going to be a lot of deer hunters, but there's going to be definitely some elk hunters in there. So I would say your experience was probably, probably common for a place where, there's not a ton of elk and deer hunters, right? I mean, because that is the big one that draws people here, is that over the counter rifle tag for Colorado. Because I think a lot of people, it's kind of like the backup. Like if you don't draw somewhere else, it's a cheaper out of state tag. You can buy it all the way up to the day of your hunt, right? So, you can make a last minute decision there. So, I think that's the big kind of qualifier there, is that you didn't have that over the
The over the
counter.
counter, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like I said, like I wish I could hunt Colorado every year because, beautiful country, like I said, great infrastructure, very clean state. My experience, although, like I said, it was only a day in there hunting. But even like, because I got there 2 days before the opener, and normally when you do that, you still see other guys, other camps and stuff like that. Like, it felt like we had the place to ourselves almost. So low pressure, even though I wasn't there the whole week or anything. But we got in there, saw three group of elk. One was a two were actually pretty nice bulls. One was a really nice bull. So we saw deer everywhere down low, and then in my first glassing spot, a couple does popped out. Boom, there's buck and he's chasing. I mean, it was like, and just to be able to hunt mule deer in the rut. So like really, really solid hunt for 3 points. Like that's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the sweet spot, man, is those ones where you gotta wait just a little bit to draw them. But especially like mule deer here in Colorado. I mean, we have I think that's, again, a lot of people come here for the elk because we have the over the counter, but I think the mule deer is like top notch. I mean, you can like I don't think there's probably a unit here in Colorado where you don't have at least a chance of killing something like 170, 180, even in those lower draw units. I mean, we have solid mule deer here, and there's like I think in some of the unit that I typically try to hunt for mule deer, I typically do a second season, but the majority of the like decent bucks that you're seeing are at least 150, so you're seeing those a lot, and that's not a high draw unit, and that's I typically hunt second season, so it's not peak rut. But again, if you get like a snow or some storm system coming in, which the last few years kind of on the dot right before second season, we'll get a big snow up in the high country, and that just helps.
We
It
got
kind of
that
just
too.
gets all that stuff going, right? So
And if you're coming from out east and you're l used to looking at whitetails, a 150 mule deer is going to look like a giant.
And that's a great buck. Like that's a freaking awesome buck.
And I mean, my buck, like I said, I think in the future, I'm still on my journey as a hunter, but in the future, maybe a little more picky on opening morning, but like I said, mature buck, and he was the first buck we saw. I was like, it was kind of cool because like I still don't have a ton of practice, honestly, of seeing an animal very far away, making a plan, and sneaking up and getting in position, completely on my own, nobody's input, no, and so I was like, I'm just gonna see if I can get in range of this thing. If nothing else, like it's good practice. If I screw up and scare the deer away, I don't really care because it's 9 o'clock on opening day. And it was just perfect. And so,
It's worked out.
yeah. And that's like, and yeah, it's just one of those hunts that's just like a really good memory. And I'm
Yeah.
editing the
Oh, man.
episode myself because I wanted to, like, because that was the whole point of the hunt was, oh, even my other hunts that I've done, quote unquote, solo with videographers, I've like intentionally hired guys that were like more experienced hunter, like mountain hunters than me, to kind of get their input and their help. This one, like, my videographer was from Massachusetts, and he didn't even bring binoculars. And I was like, I want to do this
Yeah.
myself,
Yeah.
and it just worked out, man. So it was a really cool hunt. I can't wait to hunt in Colorado again. I think I got 5 or 6 elk points built up. So maybe next year I'll burn some elk points.
Heck
I
yeah,
don't
man. Well,
know.
can always hit me up if you
Yeah.
got questions.
For sure.
Yeah, and I will say, like, a 4x4, 4 point buck is something that I think, it's like seeing like a nice 6x6 elk. Like, unless you're in a unit where you burnt a ton of points, you don't
Yeah.
pass that up.
Yeah, for sure, man. And that's like I said, this might change one day, but for me right now, it's not about inches and score. It's about the experience and a mature animal. I could tell he was mature, big saggy belly, Roman nose, and you could see his manhood dangling about as he was chasing the deer. You can actually see it in the
Nice.
footage. He's like
Yeah.
swinging, dude.
That's funny. That's crazy.
So anyway, great hunt, and definitely looking forward to coming back to there. But on that hunt, we actually used the courthouse shelter, which was sick. I've talked about it a little bit before, but it's basically a wall tent. It fits three cots, three guys, but we had two guys, but like, tons of camera gear and all kinds of stuff. Plenty of room, comfortable. We had to hang out in there for a lot on the day before opener because it was snowing so bad and windy. But the thing about it is, for a guy like me, who's traveling across country, and you want a bigger, more comfortable base camp, wall tent type shelter, but the thing fits in a bag, the size of a small backpack and is very light, and super easy to put up. I mean, it's basically like putting up a big teepee, but the way it guys out, it basically turns into like a three-man wall tent.
Yeah.
Really cool shelter.
Oh, it's awesome. I'm glad you got one, 'cause I got one a few years back, and that's all I take out now
Yeah.
for that. I mean, we're planning on doing a big turkey camp here in a couple weeks when turkey when is this episode going to be coming out? Just curious.
This podcast,
Yeah.
probably 2 weeks or so, 2, 3 weeks.
Okay. Perfect. Cool. Just wanted to know based on those new products that we'd kind of
Oh,
talked
okay.
about there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I take that courthouse out, and it's it can either be just like your area where you hang out. It's super easy to put a folding camp table in there and have your whole cook set up. But yeah, like you said, the great thing is it sets up that first off, it's like we call it a wall tent. I would say like the shape is a wall tent. And if we're going on the fact that it's a wall tent, because it is different, it doesn't have a frame or anything like that. It's just two poles and kind of the structure comes from the guy outs. But if you're calling it a wall tent, it is by far the lightest wall tent on the market.
Oh yeah. And easiest and quickest to put up.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of like you get the benefits of the wall tent. Now it's obviously not canvas, so
Right.
some guys love the canvas. It tends to retain the heat a little bit more. But if you're looking for a mobile setup where you can walk into, you have plenty of space in there. We got a floor coming out for it this summer.
Oh, cool.
So if you want to be like a mobile hunter, whether that's from a truck or, I mean, shoot, we've even had people that hike them in sometimes,
You
if
could
they.
pack it in for a couple of days if you weren't carrying too much food. It
Yeah.
wouldn't be, and split it up maybe. I mean, it's really light. It's really
Yeah.
light.
13 pounds, with everything there. So, definitely TP wise, it's closest to like a 12 or a 16 man, just weight wise. But yeah, it's an awesome shelter. I just love like the cot setup. If you have a base camp, you have cots in that wall tent. You can throw all your stuff kind of underneath your cots, but then you
Yep.
have a room in the middle to have your little jet boil going, or have
Yep.
your set up there.
And you can stand up in there comfortably and get changed,
Yep,
you know,
yep.
which is awesome. And we had one of, like a Mr. Buddy heater in there. So it was like, oh, so nice, man. It's like roll. I always set my alarm like 30 minutes early and just like roll over and crank the Mr. Buddy and like
Oh,
throw
man.
all my clothes in my sleeping bag and then wake up and I can get dressed in like warmth. It's
Yep,
quite
it's
nice. And
amazing.
stand up.
Yeah. That little buddy heater trick, you know, we like as a company, we're like, you know, you shouldn't do that. Just carbon monoxide, right?
Oops.
That's like the thing. But I've done it many times with
Okay.
my buddy Riley. He has a little buddy heater. He always brings that thing, and it's so clutch, you know, because
It
we always
is.
take like one of our stoves for burning wood, but
Yeah.
to, you know,
Which
that
is
takes
cool
time to.
and awesome, but yeah, it's a little extra work. You know, you can't really just like roll out of bed and like get the fire going. Like it takes a little bit of, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what it's the best for, is just getting that warmth to get you out of the sleeping
Yeah.
bag and, you know, while you're waking up. So that's it's an underrated, you know, I feel like there's always been the thing about like propane heaters and tents and like how you shouldn't do it, but as long as you're safe, you're
Yeah.
good.
Yeah. So if you're listening, don't do that, but
Yeah, don't
also
do
do it.
We're not liable.
does the liner come with that thing?
We do sell a liner for it.
Okay. So I will say you need to get a liner because yeah, the condensation, we are on top of snow, so that's not helping anything either. But you get yeah, the liner, once we popped that thing in there, it was like we were good to go.
I would say, man, like any the majority of the time, bring in a liner if you can do it, with your, whether it's a teepee, smaller shelter,
Yeah.
it's gonna help a lot. Now, I will say, like, on that just note for everybody, like one of the things that I've found just working at Seek Outside for 5 years now, and you know, camping a ton and using the floorless shelters all the time, campsite selection will go so far to
Yeah.
minimizing condensation. Like I'm talking like even just like if you have the option of setting up, you know, down in this meadow or, you know, 20 yards even up on this little rise there. We've had that like where, you know, there have been a couple of us camped in the summer and stuff, and you know, you have multiple different spots. And I will say like the elevation helps so much with condensation. And even like if you can do it, like if it's not too cold, or if it's or like if you have a liner or something like that, if there's any way to get ventilation through there, like for example, like with that courthouse, right, we have on the backside there's like a triangle flap that you can pull out that opens
Yeah.
like a big ventilation piece there.
Yeah.
If you can like if it's not too cold to where you can open up the front door just a little bit, or like
Yeah.
have that screen going, it
See, that was our
eliminates it.
problem. We had two guys in there. We were kind of down right by a river. We were on top of snow. And the way the snow was so deep that it was like banked around us. So great for keeping cold drafts out, but there was like almost like airtight seal around the bottom. So it was like a recipe for like the worst possible condensation.
Oh yeah. Well, and like when you camp on fresh, you know, like green vegetation, right? Basically,
Yeah.
what you're doing with any tent is you're creating a greenhouse.
Yeah, it's a humidifier. Like literally, people don't actually, most people probably don't know this, but like plants actually emit humidity at night. It's called like aspiration.
And especially when you heat, you know, it gets hot during the day, right? All that
Yes.
moisture condensates and leaves the vegetation and gets on the roof of your tent. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but you can help that a lot just by campsite selection for sure. So.
Okay, so I want to make one more note on this. So, Cimarron is the other shelter I use a lot. I have the Dyneema version. And for me, I've started a lot of times, even when I am sleeping alone in my shelter, which is quite often. I still will take the Cimarron because it's still extremely light. It does take up a little more room, maybe volume-wise, than like some like tiny little like tarps that you guys sell and stuff. But if I can afford the space, I really like still having the Cimarron and with the half nest as well, because I really like having a sleeping area that I keep completely dry and like zipped up and like, you know, no boots, no wet clothes inside, only like sleeping bag, try to keep everything totally dry. And then having like the outer area still under a shelter, and I can still stand up pretty much, or put a little camp chair in there right by the pole and get dressed inside the shelter, put my boots on, boil coffee, don't do that, eat my meal if it's raining. So it's like, it's for me, it's like literally a game changer to have an area in my shelter where I can go in out of the elements, but still have like some living space to, like I said, eat, get changed, just hang out without having to be like, all right, well, they're either gonna stand here in the rain in my rain gear or completely strip off and get my sleeping bag. I hate that. Like, I like being able to have that like mid ground. So I love taking the Cimarron with me. And people will say like, oh, Cimarron's not Alaska shelter. I took mine on our Alaska hunt this year. Zero problems. I, you know, and we were sleeping in some of the we were sleeping like I was like in a like ditch of
Tussock.
tussocks, like in like standing water pretty much. But with that half nest, the bathtub bottom kept me dry. And you know, terrible campsite, but the Cimarron did great. And but I know you guys made some improvements to it, so I want to hear about that.
Yeah, definitely. And hold on. Hey, Owen, could you close that door there? Sorry,
You're
got a
good.
shared office here.
No worries.
All right, I'll give a pause real quick. So, we got basically when this episode airs, it'll either be out or will be very close to being out right now. We have a whole new 2.0 line of basically the Cimarron and the Red Cliff coming out. And then by the
Nice.
time this airs, we will have had the Silvertip 2.0 out by for a couple weeks. So basically we're these are all models of kind of like our flagship models that we've had out for a while. You know, the Cimarron and Red Cliff, we were making those from early on, 10 years or so. And kind of the big thing is we've just gotten better at making tents. So we decided that we were going to look at these shelters and just make some slight improvements. I mean, we're better at sewing, we're better at cutting patterns. We've been doing this for 15 years now, so there are some things that just needed to be updated on that. So like with the Cimarron and Red Cliff, a lot of the changes are going to be the exact same across both of them. But like with the Cimarron, and this will apply to the Dyneema ones as well. So
Oh, you
all
are
the
going to
changes.
make Dynamas and the new ones too?
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
The big one is all of our accessories and how they attach are going to be a little bit different. So our floor liner system, which we came out with the first version for our 6 and 8 person teepee last year, it's awesome. And speaking of condensation, just having a floor, but having the floor liner combo, it makes it so much less of an issue. It's a lightweight thing, and basically how those work is, it's a full bathtub style floor with a liner that comes up to the guy out, so about 2 to 3 feet. And the cool thing, especially with like the Cimarron and Red Cliff, is that you can actually now with that floor liner combo, you can pitch it up off the ground a little bit to allow some airflow through there.
Oh, cool.
But with that liner there, you have draft protection. So what it does is it kind of,
Nice. So you
allows
get
that
the
air.
benefits of the ventilation without the cold breeze hitting you.
Exactly. Yep. We also have a new liner attachment. It just hooks up a lot easier. Like on the Cimarron, the liner attached, the old attachment was had like a little cone up top there, and that's how you attached it. The new ones, they all have loops up top there, which makes it, you know, we do have that already on the Redcliffe, but the Cimarron was kind of the outlier there. Makes it easier to like dry stuff as well. So we're gonna have loops
Nice.
attached up there. These floor liner systems are going to be backwards compatible too, for like old Cimarron and Redcliffs. They're
Cool.
just gonna attach a little bit different, so you'll get like a cone with it. So you know, for anybody that has a Cimarron Redcliffe that wants the floor liner system, there is an option there. We added a bunch of guy outs. You know, one of the so like with our with Sil Nylon, especially now, there's kind of this thought out there that it sags, right? Especially opposed to like Dyneema. Like Dyneema doesn't sag at all. It doesn't have any stretch. Sil Nylon does have a little bit of sag. It does have a little bit of stretch. I will say a lot of that comes from, I mean, Sil Nylon's kind of been the main tent material for a long time. And there's a big difference between the stuff that we use and the stuff that you get at like a big box store, right? Just in
Yeah.
terms of quality and like the denier of the actual fabric. So, but anyway, we added a bunch of guy outs to the, because the Cimarron, like the previous versions only had two. This new one has a guy out basically everywhere, just like our teepees do. So, it's a lot more, you know, you can guy it out, which eliminates sag. I will say for anybody, like if anybody is familiar with the Twilight, which is a shelter that we came out with last year, it has a bunch of guy outs on it. That thing does not sag. And we've also changed how we've cut the actual fabric to eliminate some of that extra sag as well. So,
Nice.
those are kind of the two big changes, is just new accessories, and as well as the a couple changes in the cuts, and then a bunch of guy outs there. So we're really excited about them. I think, you know, the Cimarron and Redcliffe, again, they're our flagship models, but they were just a little on the older side. They needed
Yeah.
some updates, so we're super excited. I think that good changes there. And then the Silvertip is a much different shelter than the one we used to have. So we used to make a Silvertip. I think we stopped production on it maybe 2, 3 years ago. It was kind of designed as our like shelter that can be above tree line, can just take a beating. It's small footprint, but it's a teepee that you can also put a stove in. We kind of
How does it
changed.
rank in size to oh, crap, what's the other one I have?
Like a Silex or a
Yeah,
Guardian.
Silex.
Yeah. Footprint wise, it's pretty similar. You know, I would say that the Silex is gonna feel a little bit bigger. The Silvertips, we call it's like a two P with no stove. But it's a 1 P with a stove. The Silex is just a 1 P, but
Gotcha.
just, you know, the teepees as opposed like the one pole design as opposed to the two pole design, you know, it's going to feel a little bit like obviously shorter. Now, square footage wise, it's probably got a little bit more than the Silex, but it's, I mean, it really is just like a bomb proof shelter. I mean,
Gotcha.
it's got a ton of guy outs, and just the way it's designed is you know, if you're a big mule deer hunter, or even like especially up in Alaska, like sheep hunting, if you're camping in places where you're going to be highly exposed to wind and elements, like the Silvertip is the shelter for
Okay,
you.
cool.
So yeah, that's kind of the 2.0 line that, like I said, by the time this airs, will either be out or will be coming out, you know, in the next week or
Sweet.
so here.
Yeah.
So,
And we can talk off air, but we can time the episode too, you know, to kind of coordinate with the release of that.
perfect. Yep.
Cool, man. I was gonna ask you. Oh, and then yeah, I mean, obviously, for me, I think it's also just cool that like y'all stuff, like you mentioned earlier, it's made in Colorado, and like you can see like somebody not named Ching Kuang made it. They write their name on, like, this was made by Melanie or whatever. Nothing against Chinese people. I'm not being racist. I just like products made in America. Like, if Ching Kuang worked in Colorado, I'd be fine with that. But I like products made in America. It's cool.
Yeah, and I think what it is for us is it's like you have somebody that is like a lot of our seamstresses are big time campers. So they are people that realize, as opposed to like some, even, I mean, you know, there's some factories in the States here where it's super impersonal, impersonable, right? You're just getting it sent over there. And but like I would say that that's kind of the unique thing about our factory is we control all the manufacturing here. So we have like, you know, seamstresses that are taking this stuff out on the weekends to camp.
They
I mean, we
understand
have
how it works
exactly.
and the
And they,
application.
the important thing is they're not going to like cut corners because they know that, all right, you know, like this seam needs to be this certain way because of this reason, right? And I have always thought that like one of the cool things about us is, you know, I would say that we're definitely, as opposed to early on in our days when some of our customers might have started following us, we're a much bigger company now. And you know, but we still try to keep that like kind of family. I mean, we are a family-owned company, but just that whole vibe. So like if you want, if you have a, you know, say a bear gets into your tent or something like that, you send it into us, we're gonna repair it right here. We're gonna probably call you and be like, hey, here's your options. You know, you can either do this, you can do that. It's something like a zipper replacement. You know, zippers always go out. You send that into us. It's not like we're making any money off of these repairs. It's super cheap, super quick. We'll get it sent back to you as opposed to, you know, if you buy something from again, a big box store, maybe something like that happens, you're out $200, $300 and you know, it's going to be a pain in the butt to get that thing fixed. So, I've always, you know, obviously I'm biased work here, but I've always appreciated that about our company and just like, you know, the people who are who make those decisions really try hard and we're doing our best to keep things made in the States and you know, that's very valuable for us and it's just it's fun. It's a fun place to work.
Sweet, man. Well, I've definitely enjoyed not only using y'all's products but partnering with you guys the last couple of years, and hope we continue that, man, because I love y'all's stuff and I love everything you just said, that whole vibe. So yeah, man. Where first I want to just real quick, just where can folks go if they want to check out the new shelters, and then also want to hear like what you got planned for this fall.
Yeah. New shelters, just the website. You know, sign up for our mailing list. That's always a good way. We got a bunch of emails going out when new products coming out and stuff like that. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube. We got plenty of awesome Owen. People have probably seen him on YouTube. He does all the instructional videos.
Tutorials and stuff. Yeah, those are helpful.
So even just when you're doing research, those are always good ones to see to make sure that you're getting the right thing.
For sure.
Plant.
And if you use my code Quest, I got to drop it. You can save a
Yes.
little bit when you order.
Yep, definitely. Exactly.
So
Yeah.
use that code Quest.
Get 10% Quest. Yep. Yeah. So that's where you can find us. Plans for this fall. I know I have one odds are, as long as I get drawn for it, a mule deer hunt,
Sweet.
second season mule deer hunt that we're gonna do. Got an area that we want to go pretty deep up in there, and
Nice.
actually went with a buddy last year, and he killed his first deer out of this area, so
Cool.
it was fun and really cool spot to hunt. So that's kind of the big one. Gonna do over the counter. Again, I'm like that whole non-resident over the counter thing just changed this year, so I'm very interested to see how it does. I think it should, like I said, I just the worst thing for me is when you're hunting and you call in another dude, like that just kind of ruins the whole
It's so
thing for me.
disheartening. And I'm gonna say, although this is probably gonna annoy some people, I understand that people might be upset about, you know, no more non-resident over-the-counter archery elk. You know, personally don't mind it just because I'm the type of person who I'm planning multiple years out in advance. I would rather have a better experience and have to wait an extra year or two to get a tag than just kind of knowing it's going to be a freaking zoo, you
Oh yeah,
know?
100%. Well, and you know, both you and I have hunted elk in New Mexico. I mean, that's a place where there's no over the counter, and in comparison to like, and like, don't get me wrong, you can have awesome, and I've killed bulls during over the counter archery in Colorado here. You can have great experiences, but you gotta go down to some place like New Mexico. It's just a whole different ball game. I mean, the pressure, and like you can actually call things in, and
Dude,
like they're actually rutting during the
that
day,
was the
whereas like,
craziest experience, man.
yeah.
Yeah, they were like, I was on a muzzleloader tag, so I was even like, you know, maybe past post rut. I don't know. I mean, past peak rut. But yeah, like literally bulls everywhere, screaming their faces off, did not see a single other hunter the entire time.
Yeah.
I had like miles to myself and just bulls everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Insane.
And like when, so just a little context for people. I mean,
And that's a straight lottery too. I didn't build
it
up 20
is.
points there. I just applied and got lucky.
Yeah. And there's units where you can draw every couple of years down there, you know, and still get a great hunt. But like, I'm buddies with one of the CPW, like customer service guys. He kind of handles all the customer facing stuff here. He comes into the shop a bunch, but he was telling me that they actually did a study here in Colorado, with, you know, they placed some audio recording equipment out in the woods, you know, one year, or they probably did it a couple of years. But anyway, the moral of this study, or the kind of the hypothesis, or the findings, sorry, is that like elk would stop bugling as soon as they heard hunters in the field, you know, because there's obviously people get out there and they take the bugle tube and they're not the
Doug
best at
Flutie.
it. Exactly. And elk would just shut down. And I mean, there have been more and more studies. That unit I was referring to here that I've always hunted, like elk numbers have gone down because there's just so many people there. They get pushed to private. I mean, it's no secret. New Mexico, we had, you know, we were the one year where we had probably the most action, it was that kind of first rifle, which is like October 10th. So for Colorado, a lot of people would say that's like too late or post rut, right? But we had bulls coming in every day, and actually one of the bulls, I was with my dad and brother. My dad shot his bull, and we had three bulls coming in at that time. After he shot the bull, we still had two bulls bugling their way in to us. So it was like, I don't know, like maybe that can happen somewhere like super deep in Colorado, but I've never experienced that, to where they're not wired like they are for people.
I mean,
And
I get like, you know, access for people and allowing people to hunt. So it's a fine line to walk there, because I don't want to say like, oh, people who are not good hunters should not be allowed to hunt. That's not what I'm saying at all. Like, it definitely
no.
should be that. But at the same time, I mean, you are at the same time, it's a serious thing, and there are guys that take it very seriously. And if you get like some dude who just like, you know, wakes up hungover, drives to the gas station, grabs a tag, and goes out there and starts being an idiot and just like cranking on a bu like it's one thing if you're like inexperienced and you're trying your best and you're being respectful. But if you're at the end of the day, there are some guys out there that are just idiots that don't know what they're doing and they're screwing it up for everybody. And if you take away that over the counter, you're gonna weed out most of those guys. And that might sound harsh, but like I said, if you're a
Yeah.
beginner and you're doing it right and you're respectful and you're making mistakes, go for it. Because
Yeah.
I've been there too. But there are also guys who have no business being out there, just to be blunt.
Yeah. Well, I more so just even meant like just the sheer numbers of people. Like, it,
Yeah.
Like you can call in elk with bad bugles. Like sometimes elk make weird sounds, but
Yeah.
it's more the fact of like if
50
there's
people.
one all of a sudden, yeah, and there's all of a sudden this one day where all these elk hear these side by sides going around and they're like, oh, something's different here, and then they hear like weird bugles and weird sounds that they
Yeah.
aren't used to hearing, they're gonna shut down. And I think for like new hunters, man, hunting, especially elk, can be tough. It can be really tough. You put on a lot of miles. There's days where you don't see anything, just like any hunting. But elk hunting can be especially tough. And I think kind of to my point earlier of where during COVID there's this big spike and a lot less hunters these past few years than there were during the COVID years. I think it was because, if a guy has a bad experience
Yeah.
their first time out, where there's just all these other people and they're not seeing anything,
Yeah,
that
for
is
sure.
much more detrimental. I think that's more of a barrier to entry than if you had to wait, 2, 3 years to draw a tag and then you have an unbelievable
A better
experiment.
experience, yeah.
Yeah,
Yep.
that's gonna get that person so much more invested
Yep.
in hunting conservation.
For sure. Like this Wyoming bull behind me right here, general tag, still took 4 points to draw. But since I had a local friend out there, shout out David Bow Spider, he has horses, so we were able to get in, past where most people could go. And unpressured elk are a different animal. I mean,
Oh yeah.
this was mid-October, and there were bugles ripping off all around us in
Yeah.
mid-October. And we had some weather helping things out too, but anyway, unpressured elk are a different experience, and I personally would, rather forego that opportunity of maybe getting an over-the-counter tag every year if it means a little better hunting every other year. But anyway, it's to
Yeah.
each their own. But
I'm in the same boat, man.
yeah,
Same boat.
yep. And if you play it right, you can still hunt every year. You just might have to switch around a little bit and have a little bit of a plan.
Yeah. I
So.
think that's important. Just having a plan and like, thinking a couple of years in advance and,
Yeah. And at the end of the day, too, I mean, heck, if you want to really make the argument of, well, you guys are being snobby, like guys need to be able to hunt. Okay. But we have to also recognize elk and especially mule deer are more fragile and more limited species with more fragile ecosystems. If you just want to get a new guy out hunting, go to the south and you can buy 6 deer tags. And then you can buy 6 more when you finish those. Like, go to Texas. Like, go shoot some whitetail. And there's nothing wrong with that. But like, these delicate species with delicate ecosystems, they might require a little more dedication. So anyway.
Yeah, and just one more thing. I mean, because I want to say, like, I'm pro new hunters. Like,
For sure.
I think anybody that's against new hunters, you don't see the, I mean,
The
what
big picture.
the And the fact is, like, the percentage of hunters in this country is going down. Yes, we might have more numbers, but the percentage is what really matters because that's our voice in legislation and all
True.
that stuff. And so you need new hunters, but you need new good hunters and new
Yeah.
hunters that are experienced and
And represent the
or
sport well.
exactly. So
Yeah.
I'm def like I take new people out all the time.
Yeah.
My buddy Austin. I got another buddy this year that I'm gonna be taking out for his first hunt. But
Sweet.
you gotta get people
And
invested.
yeah, and you're doing it the right way, man. Like you're, taking time out of your schedule to make new quality hunters, and that's really the best conservation. I hope to use my platform to kind of reach out to those folks and help inspire and educate folks to do stuff. But at the end of the day, it comes down to like a someone taking you, and so that's the biggest thing you can do if you want to really like do hunter recruitment, but quality hunter recruitment like you're talking about.
Exactly.
So good on you, man. Well, this has been really good. It's great talking to you as always, man, and let's stay in touch. If I do come out there for elk next year, we got to link up this time and at least hang out and camp one night or something.
Yeah, definitely, man. No doubt. Yeah, let me know.
Cool.
Let me know.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you.
Yeah.